First of all, I want to thank Gaia Star Temple for all the work it has been doing over the years. And Mitch and Laurie Stargrove, thank you for having invited me. It is an honor to be among such inspiring names today. I am André Consciência. I am from Portugal, as it has been said. You might notice it from my accent. So if you sometimes find me searching for my words, don't take it heavily upon you. For the sake of convenience, one might say that I am an artist and a cultural agent. I have been most of all a writer. This is my main passion. And in Portugal, I write literary works. The books I bring here today are not so much literary in nature, in the sense that literature invents itself in order to be a form of art. But these are books that are specific to a certain topic. they are books about panionic magic, one might say. So these are practical books mostly, and after that they're also theoretical books. But before I can move on to the books, I must talk a little bit of three concepts that I find are essential to work the any kind of magic or occult knowledge. And these are mysticism. Mysticism is connected to the inner experience, the innermost being, and how it perceives. Then there is gnosis, which is the cognition of this inner experience. And after that, there comes magic. Magic is the application of this knowledge. So how can I use my cognition of the innermost self and revealed knowledge I got from it? How can I use it in order to transform myself or the outer world? Based on these three principles, I wrote these books. But even before we get to the books, as they talk about panionic magic, we must talk a little bit about AR. So let's talk about Gnostics to start with. And I don't mean the primitive Christians, but more the Alexandrian Gnostics. They saw the Aeons or the Aeons as a little bit as the spheres, the Sephira of the ocean, the tree of life. The Hebrew tree of life. These aeons were emanations of one another. We got an aeon and it emanates another aeon and so forward. From the most subtle levels to the grosser levels, which creates a form of ladder that we can ascend through. Or even it can create the opportunity of the redemption of the aeons themselves. Now, in this concept is not so much vertical; it is more connected with the way the Egyptians measure time. So it is horizontal. It is the aeons are seen in a time frame. Although they are, of course, essences. So this creates between authors such as Aleister Crowley, Akkad, Grant, Nema, this creates a procession of the aeons. This is a concept that was given great importance by Aleister Crowley. In this context, the aeons move through time from one aeon to the other. And this procession is also a sort of progression of the EMs. Of course, dinner, as it might look, but before we get to that, this is the way of Abracadabra. The standard edition, these books are from Sirius Limited Esoterica, published by Sirius Limited Esoterica. This is a fine drawing of Hermes from Oriel, Defenestrat Pascal. This Hermes here comes handy because in this book, The Way of Abracadabra, the first one to be published in this series, I try to remove the most religious aspects of Telema. And I try to work with the hermeticism that is in it. That is, I find that Telema has been subject to a lot of interpretation. There are a lot of texts that people can't agree on them. What you do is get the universal methods behind Telema and arrange them in a way that you can work it step by step. And you need to work it step by step because one step is the tool to perform the next step. We get here the grade of the pentagram in which the magician works himself towards self-perfection. And he works with the apparent and the invisible faculties, becoming conscious of them all. After that, there comes the grade of the hexagram. And in this, the magician, having become in control of himself and self-conscious, he can finally begin to become aware of his surroundings, truly aware, and to fuse his consciousness with the consciousness that is outside him. After that, there comes the grade of the Knight of Pan, and this is something we don't want to talk about a lot because it involves the crossing of the abyss and one must really experience it. This is the deluxe edition, by the way, of the same book. Now, once one has worked through the way of Abracadabra, one is capable of if one does not have training in other systems, one is now rendered capable of working the following books, the books that come next. This is the Path of Ipsus, volume one. And you most of all, most of you must know this word Ipsus. It was the word found by Nema to access and work the Ion of Mahat. In the cover, there is the sigil of Nathan, the avatar of double consciousness, of our future in the Aeon of Mat, as home of the riches, a concept again by Nema. And this was drawn by Ion, which he will be presenting here today later. In this book, The Path of Ipsus, Volume 1, I worked through the aeons, aeons before the aeon of Horus, the aeon of the sun, according to the form of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. So what are these aeons? We start here by the nameless aeon or the aeon of Bes. And these Egyptian names, they come because Crowley had an affection for the Egyptian pantheon. He was an adept of the Golden Dawn. So the nameless Aeon is worked mostly in this book through the shamanic methods. There is a system connected to shamanism in order to work through it. This aeon is an aeon that is prehistoric. So there wasn't the importance we give to words nowadays wasn't so much important in there. There was a sense of direct perception and direct communication. Animism was a reality. It did not need to be imagined in order to manifest itself. After the Nameless Aeon, we work here to the, so this the Nameless Aeon, we were hunter-gatherers, tribes, prehistoric tribes. So in the Aeon of the Mother, or the Aeon of Isis, these tribes start to fixate themselves in the land near river banks and rivers or even oceans, becoming fishermen. And they start to see the world around, move around them in circles. They are fixated in the land and they see the world moving around them in circles. The stars, the animals migrating, the land itself and its rhythm. They are standing still in the land, so they can observe it very well. This is an aeon that is connected with the cycles and the cycle. So time is a cycle. It goes back and back again. It does not go forward. It is a time that is connected with the ancestors. So in here we work mostly stellar cults and witchcraft, things of this kind, and their heritage. In after the aeon of Isis, the aeon of the mother, comes the aeon of the father, Osiris. In this time, the tribes, there were so many tribes gathered in the same places that civilization had its start. So they needed some form. They needed some way to create order out of all this chaos. And this is where the written word is important. So the written word starts to rule this aeon. What happens is that the authority, the written word creates the law. So the authority that connects itself with the law has a certain advantage. It is a hierarchical aeon. There is some verticality to it. Time is again vertical. It is not progressive and it does not go back. It is standing still in a vertical line from superior to inferior. This is a time where you get pharaohs and slaves, kings and servants and shepherds and sheep. And I say shepherds and sheep because it is convenient. In this book, I work mostly through the mystic aspects of Christianity, because it was when the Aeon of Osiris started to crumble as a dominant aeon. Afterwards, there comes the aeon of the sun, the aeon of Horus. We do not work this aeon in here almost, but because it has been worked through the way of Abrahadabra. But this aeon is when time starts being progressive from the past to the present to the future. And Horus is this force and fire that that breaks boundaries and removes obstacles and limitations. And he has great strength indeed. So there's also some danger to it. Imagine the power we have now with nuclear weapons, etc. So we don't want a nuclear war to spread. This aeon is very sacred, but needs to be balanced. And that's where Mahat comes in, the aeon of Mahat. This is the Path of Ipsus, Volume 2, is solely dedicated to the aeon of Mahat. In this book, I try to not only to follow on the footsteps of Nemat in her Mahat magic book, but I also try to, I see that magic has been stuck since the ancient Greece. You have the four classical elements, for example, and they are very important in magic. But nowadays we have the whole periodic table and no one has worked through it. So I felt that in order to update this body of knowledge that is magic, I needed to go through it, through classic science to modern science, such as quantum physics, etc. I needed to go through it all and analyze it in terms of mysticism and in terms of occultism and magic. But this, because science is reading from the book of Isis, from nature, and magic has been a little asleep in this sense. So science is an ally here. We work through this all and then we follow on the footsteps of Nemo, as I was saying. Also relying on my own gnosis, on my own experience. And there are many suggestions throughout all of Nemo's works. And there are suggestions that you can't see the whole unless you have a good intuition. I try to shed the light on these suggestions and make them workable and very knitted. I also give some hints about the wordless aeon that comes out from the aeon of Mahat. And if we would see time as we see time today, it comes after the aeon of Mahat. Now, these aeons are not so linear as in the world. You have many geographical areas, and imagine the aboriginal tribes. They are living in the aeon of Bess, the nameless aeon. Some cultures that are really connected to the land and live around the land, do everything for the land, etc. They are living in the aeon of the mother, the aeon of Isis. The aeon of Osiris is, of course, still present in most of the world. And so is the aeon of Horus. So there is a time for freedom, and we are living it, and it is bursting still. The aeon of Mahat is also making itself very very present in the when we care about the environment, about nature, about social justice, and about injustice. These three things are boiling in the time we live in today. So there is another concept that makes this is the concept of the aeon of Mahat being concurrent with the aeon of Horus. This comes to be because in the aeon of Mahat, we don't see time as we see time today, as Crowley even suggested. So in a way, you can imagine that there is a sculpture and he imagines a form and then he creates this form out of the dirt. So which came first? In the aeon of Mahat, if we have to have dualistic comparisons, time is flowing backwards in a way. It is coming to us in order to lead us to it. And in the world of Sayam, I see time as something that is, we are outside the circles of time, as Kenneth Grant put it. So time is something that we can move time. This time travel is not so hard to swallow if we follow the occult lore and knowledge. We have voodoo or voodoo and spider weaves time and it makes time and makes it. So time is not something it's not something material. Even in the Horus Mahat Lodge, we have been working a form of the 11th star ritual, which is a ritual we do in every new moon, that is connected with time travel, both to the past and to the future. And what does this mean? It does not mean that we are trying to change the past or the future. We are trying to become aware of time as a whole and to integrate it within our hearts in order to tune ourselves with this natan. And this natan is something that is something or someone of, or a representation that has a double consciousness. He keeps his individuality, but also he has access to the collective, to he can think to all individuals and see through all the individuals. this is what makes the end of Mahat an important key to understand all AMs. We don't see the AMs here as there is this progression of the AMs doesn't make one more holy than the other. What happens is that the AMs have are this large amount of time, right? So when you examine an AM, you are seeing only a part of it in time. Can only see through parcels, piece by piece, and also you have this distortion of time, but also the distortion of the individual. The individual might interpret, you might experience this certain AM in a certain way, and the other in another way. So these are two things that Mahat, when fully practiced, can solve. Because the concept of time is very different, and also you can access this collective consciousness. I will read from. Let me just get the lights on. So I will read from Liber Penai Praenumbra because I want to have Nema's words here with me in this presentation. And they are connected with the topic I was just expanding upon. The consciousness of the human race is moving towards the state which will signal the advent of the Aeon of Mahat. This is a type of gestalt persona wherein the individuals will share, in addition to their unique consciousness, a planet-wide awareness and empathy of being man. The long-dreamed utopia of the race will manifest soon. There does already exist small instances of this group consciousness. The gestalts are not yet stabilized in the kingdom, as of this writing. But those working with the current 93 in proper fashion will have experienced the gestalt. She also says, this is the commentary to Library Penai Praenumbra. She also writes, the reality of the abyss, the crossing of which is a prerequisite of Mahat consciousness, is more textured than the term would imply. Only through the persistent exercise of the total individual will can the abyss be transcended. The illusion of ego is constantly being regenerated by the play of nuit. The initial leap of accepting one's individual non-existence must be followed by continuous acts of death. Only when the acceptance becomes an habitual mode of awareness, at all times, in the waking consciousness, can one begin operating in terms of Mahat. So this commentary explains how one can dissipate the distortion of time and of ego, of individuality. It also states that to operate in Mahat, we must have crossed the abyss. And this makes it something ambitious. Crossing the abyss wasn't considered possible before Crowley. It was something for the secret chiefs, such as the secret chiefs of the Golden Dawn. It was something for someone that had died already. So this makes one capable of seeing the truth of all realms, and to work, one capable of working panionic magic properly. Panionic magic is, as the pan suggests, which means all. It works with all aeons. I would like then to explain, to talk a little bit of a plan I have for the future. And it has started, but I don't know when it will be finished. It is another book. It's not a practical book of magic like these books, but it's more philosophical in nature. And it will be called by the same mouth, which is what Ipsis means, according to them. It also means by the same poem. So there's some ambiguity here, or not, I don't think so. So this starts with a vision I had in school, I remember, after the primary school, probably. I was being introduced to philosophy, and we were learning what the philosophers from ancient Greece had to tell us. So, and I thought they were very smart, but also something dumb about it, because they came up with great visions, and then the next they came up with great visions, and then the next philosopher would go against the philosopher that came before him, and they were always in conflict. I was trying to understand human knowledge. Humanity was something kind of new to me. I felt that. And I was trying to understand human knowledge. And I heard them as if they were one. So they were wise men looking at the prism and seeing different angles of the prism and communicating these coordinates. I see that philosophy has taken this course of dialects and constant conflicts. And I will try to do in this book is to examine human knowledge throughout history, applying the formula of Ipsis, almost as a mathematical formula. And this implies also that there is non-dualistic knowledge, of course, and there is dualistic knowledge, but the dualistic knowledge does not need to be out of harmony. It can be in harmony perfectly. And this is what Hermeticism also has taught us. You say, do not confuse the plane, right? you have natural philosophy and moral philosophy and metaphysics. I can see how they fit. Metaphysics fit the mental plane, morals fit the soul, so the astral plane. Natural philosophy fits with Malkuth. This is just a raw example, a very simple one. The mouth is a zero. In every thought, there is its own contradiction. Of course, if the whole world would simply abide by this, there would be peace. But if there is, let's say, and you are just, I mean, zero, so I'm at peace, this wouldn't help you a lot. So the until the whole of humanity is in this state, we can only make conjectures. So what I would like to challenge you with is to think about world problems, let's say political problems, economical problems, human problems, that problems that connect with the way we perceive reality and ourselves, all kinds of problems, and think of them in order to try to find a solution. But this solution will have a rule. It is forbidden that this solution doesn't find a greater good that is not good enough for all of us. This greater good must be good enough for all of us. This seems to be complicated, but it will simplify things at the same time. So to finish what I had to present to you today, I must introduce myself a little bit further. When I was 14 years old, I started taking an interest in the Theosophical Society, but quickly I found Aleister Crowley, which I consider to be an hermeticist, an hermetic outer. And in that, I started to follow in this vein. And I also found Mr. Franz Barton, another hermeticist. I started following Thelema with all its outers and the school of Franz Barton. Through a Rosicrucian nexus. And I followed this throughout my years. Up until now, I went through many telemic systems. Finding something was missing. Thelema was very much masculine, of course, a bit unbalanced. This is when I found Mahat Magic, this book by Nema, in a general story. It wasn't even an occult story. I looked through it and I bought it. And in around, I think it was around 3 years, I had completed my first round of practice. I say round because initiation moves in spirals. You go from one, from the beginning to the end, and you're back at the beginning in layers, absorbing everything in layers, deeper and deeper. And I found that what Nema had brought was indeed the feminine force that would balance Thelema. Even Babylon, in many aspects, is as a projection of masculine desire. And it brings the testosterone to higher levels. I wasn't sure if Babylon was really the key that was missing in this form. Mahat certainly was to me, at least. So I eventually, when I finished Mahat Magic for the first time, I ended up joining the Horus Mahat Lodge. And this is the lodge that I am most connected with up to today. I think that I have said most of what I wanted to say here today. So I don't know if anyone wants to ask me something. Conclude that I was saying this idea for by the same mouth as the on the introduction and the iconography of the mouth written. This came from a work that I was performing with, trying to connect with the source Andromeda, which Nema finds is the source of the Mahat current, from Andromeda down to Sirius to the Sun, and from the Sun to our planetary sphere. Of course, I don't think that I reached Andromeda. I got some sigil and informations I could work with in the first day. On the second day, I reached an astral zone that is connected with Yazd, probably. that had the aesthetics of what would be a transmission from Andromeda. From there on, I got the instruction to write a certain book, and that's where I am at right now.